You're listening to Michelle Redfern and Mel Butcher on Lead to Soar, bringing you the best leadership advice and mentorship from around the world. Learn more at leadtosoar.com.
Welcome to Lead to Soar. Michelle, I'm so glad to be back talking about your book, The Leadership Compass.
Thanks, Mel. I'm happy to be back talking about it as well, because it's a very exciting month, because this is, as we record this, listeners, this is launch month. So, you know, I feel like we've been blathering on about this book for ages. And well, this is the month where you'll actually be able to get your hot little hands on it.
Yes, I love it. So we have recorded a couple of episodes about the book that cover BQ, business intelligence, EQ, emotional intelligence, and now we're at social intelligence, SQ. So let's start at a high level here, and I want to quote you. You wrote, SQ means that in a crowded and noisy world, you are intentional about building and nurturing your professional brand and building and leveraging strategic networks. Help us understand what social intelligence encompasses. Give us a breakdown here.
Yeah, thanks, Mel. So social intelligence, this is the scoop up skill set. That's a very inelegant way of putting it. So there are definitely standalone skills in this skill set. But like a lot of other things in life, the SQ skills merge and meld and complement the EQ and the BQ skills. So social intelligence in leadership, this is the leader who uses a wide range of competencies. So what they're doing is saying, okay, I've got my business intelligence up then, which is business, strategic and financial acumen along, and that's fueled by success orientation. They've also got emotional intelligence. So they have the ability to lead themselves. So they deeply understand themselves, what makes them go tick, tick, boom, in good ways and bad ways. And they can lead others and organizations. They bring all of that together with the, well, those competencies together, and that builds their confidence and, of course, their courage. And, you know, we've talked about what is confidence. Confidence rests on a basis of competency. And they use all of those skills to focus strategically on people themselves through their personal brand, their professional brand, actually. And they also focus on how do I build a strategic network of folks who could help me and my business grow. So that's the socially intelligent leader. And there's a whole lot of bits and pieces that go underneath it. The enablers around all of that, and this is where your personal, your professional brand comes into it, is you become known as an awesome businesswoman. So that businesswoman who leads for outcomes, she takes people on the journey with her, and she captures their hearts, their minds, their efforts. And she's also a highly trustworthy, ethical person that you really want to do business with. That's what the socially intelligent leader looks like, sounds like, acts like.
Wonderful. I'm going to pull little snippets out of your book a couple of times here. So in the book you wrote, the majority of coaching, training, and mentoring that women receive falls into categories of EQ and SQ. And skipping ahead a bit, SQ includes building confidence, raising your profile, and displaying executive presence. Michelle, why are these the areas where women most often receive advice? And what do women need to know about where it can lead them astray?
So, of course, taking a step back, as I like to do, this book, The Leadership Compass, is an add-on to the next version of complementary to No Ceiling, No Walls, which Susan Colantuono wrote in 2012. And we know that Susan's research in this century, over the last 25 years, has shown that there are critical skill sets that lead to the most senior roles in organizations. And those critical skill sets are business intelligence. It's BQ, how to be business savvy, using Susan's language as well. And where women are done a disservice, Mel, and oh my lordy wordy, I did one of my amazing Game Changers programs with my fabulous, fabulous client IAG yesterday. And I did one of the opening sets, which is around let's take a new look at leadership. And once again, the evidence was there with a group of 30 women who, when I asked them, what's the best career advice you've ever been given? They fell into exactly the same pattern as the thousands of other women that you and I have worked with over the last 10 years, and certainly Susan has over the last 20, who talk about my career advice told me to be more confident, step up, speak out, blah, 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 blah. So majority sits in the EQ stuff. Now, why does that occur? Because we have expectations of how women and men participate and behave in society. Men take charge, women take care. So when people don't examine their own mindsets about women, work, leadership, power, careers, they will potentially go, well, Mel must want to hear about how she can balance family and work. Now, that's not unimportant, because being a strategic mentor, part of it is saying, hey, I had to do that juggle through my career, but it's not that getting that right wasn't the stuff that got me appointed as the CEO or the executive. The stuff that got me appointed as a CEO or an executive was being known for the ability to run a business, to grow a business sustainably, profitably, to look after people, customers, shareholders. And when I ask women this question, and this is why I get so animated about it, I'm still hearing in 2024 either the advice they're given or the advice they're paying attention to largely rests on interpersonal skills. And frankly, that's okay at the start of your career, but it's not in the middle and heading towards the top, because you must be known as someone who can run a business to be considered for roles with more authority and responsibility.
Yeah. In chapter 7 of the Leadership Compass, you mentioned signposts that helped you with a few revelations, and you listed those four revelations as, I am a committed leader of the organization I work for, but that organization is not my personal brand. 2, I am responsible for curating and cultivating my leadership brand. 3, my leadership brand is what makes me stand out. And 4, I am my own CEO. Talk to us about why were these revelations important to your SQ journey? And if you want to, maybe unpack one of them a bit.
I think the first one, let's start at the start. I was, and listeners, those of you who have been around us a long time know that I talk about my time at Telstra, my 15 years growing up professionally at Telstra, with a lot of love and a lot of respect, but also me leaving that organization. My goodness, one of the best things that I ever did for my career. I mean, hugely risky, but one of the best things I did for my career, because what I learned after that was, I'm not a lifer. I'm not going to be Michelle of Telstra for life. So that was number one. And I wouldn't have been able to describe this then, Mel, but I inherently, intuitively knew I need to catapult myself out to see if I really am as good as I keep getting told I am. I need to prove myself, probably to myself actually, but anyway. So part of that was, I jumped into a new business, and I've been very open and honest that my first 6 months there was really rough. I had massive identity crisis, had a very big wake-up call about my skills shortages. But then as time went on, it was interesting. As my network and visibility increased, so did the taps on the shoulders to say, would you like to come and work for us? Because I've seen what you're doing and I love it. And I thought, hang on a minute, I need to be my own brand here, because yes, I'm Michelle, who's the executive general manager at UCMS, which was my then employer, loved it, loyal, loved my boss, but I knew I wasn't going to be there for life. I knew that wasn't going to be the end destination for me. And so did Denise, my boss, my CEO. She was awesome, still one of my greatest mentors. So my revelation, Mel, was I need people to be able to look at me as a standalone product. So if I'm a standalone product, it's Michelle Redfern, the person who can. Michelle Redfern is the one you want to talk to about. Michelle Redfern, gee, she was good at. Michelle Redfern, not, we should go to UCMS and see if they've got someone who, no. So I knew for my career advancement, and you know, I'm ambitious and I'm very, very driven, I needed to get really clear on that. And part of all of those revelations, which I talked about in the book, was A, nobody knew me outside of my very small ecosystem in my previous employer. Oh, not many people did, but people didn't know how I showed up. They didn't know what I could do. They didn't know what my potential was. So I needed to set about making sure people knew, because I was the breadwinner in our family. I had, for a whole range of reasons, I had a divorce. So I was back to square one financially. And my best commodity, my biggest asset was me and my ability to earn a really good wage to look after my family. So it was my economic security that really drove it, but also my ambition and knowing that this current role, which I loved, wasn't my ultimate destination.
I want to mirror back what you said for the listeners. My biggest asset was me. That's really poignant and a good message for all of us to remember.
Hey, Mel, I just want to give a shout out here because I recorded a podcast yesterday with, we're going to have to get her on our show, Sadhana Smiles. She's a CEO of one of the major real estate franchises here in Australia. I've known Sadhana for quite a few years. She interviewed me yesterday about podcast. Now, I've seen Sadhana in action with women talking about know your worth. And we touched on this. You have to know your worth. You have to ask for what you need. And that's monetary and non-monetary. But it comes back to our EQ skills. Know thyself, leader. Who am I? How do I show up? What do I bring? What do I cause? All that kind of stuff. So just a little sidebar there. Shout out to Sadhana Smiles. So listeners, check out Sadhana's podcast too, which is called Future Leader.
So you were talking just a moment ago about networking, and I want to take it there next. So listeners, I'm going to ask Michelle a couple of questions that get into a couple aspects of social intelligence, and we hope that that's enough to whet your appetite to get you to check out her book. Okay, so networking. Couple of things here. In the book, you describe yourself as having previously been snobby about networking. So talk to us a little bit about women's mindsets about networking. And in particular, I want to ask you to differentiate networking from strategic networking.
Yes, I admit I was a snob about networking. I used to look down my nose, and particularly once, as I said, when I'd made that transition from Telstra into my next role where I had to network, and I found it distasteful because my mindset was, I don't want people to consider me one of those slimy salesmen that sidles up to you at a networking function, slips you a business card, gets your contact details, then never leaves you alone for the next 2 years. My mindset shifted when I had yet another epiphany. It was a growth period, listeners. It was painful, but it was growth. When I realized I was responsible for growing the business, and just like me as a product, my business that I was responsible for was a product. And if no one knew how freaking awesome we were, if I wasn't out there talking about our successes, our potential, the problems we solved, well, that's hiding your light under a bushel and no one comes to seek you out. So I had this epiphany, and then I'm kind of mixing up my timelines here a bit. One of the other things that I've learned from Susan reinforced my learnings was networking is working. So some of our mindsets that we have as women, and honestly, women, you don't need fixing, but we do need help to navigate a system that has been set up by men and for men and largely dominated by men for centuries. So this is the navigation stuff. We need to be in all of the places where the decisions are being made, particularly about our own careers. And sometimes here are some of the mindsets that I have felt, and I know other women still feel or consider to be true. I'm really busy and I've got so much work to do, I can't afford to go and do that thing. Now, the thing might be an event, whatever, a town hall, whatever it may be. I've got work to do. I don't really like it because I'm an introvert or I'm shy, and I hate the thought of having to talk to people that I don't know, and I find that effort really sapping, and I don't know how to do it. I just don't know how, so I'm not going to do it. So on and so forth. So in terms of being busy, well, the first mindset shift is networking is working. It is part of your job, folks. It's part of your job and being in service of yourself and your career, and also being in service of your organization. The second fact check or myth busting here is that what is networking? It is not an event with crappy wine and shitty canapes and salespeople shoving business cards into your hands. Now, if people are still going to those, I'm sorry, because that's a really rubbish event. But networking is happening anytime you're in a room with someone other than yourself. You have the ability to network strategically, and I'm going to go there in a minute, Mel, anytime you're with anyone other than yourself, because people do business with people, and networking is a set of skills, and it means, how do I engage with this person or people in this room with me, in person or virtually? How do I understand who they are and what their problems are and how I might help them solve some of those problems? How could they help me solve some of my problems? We've got to get to know people. And the golden trilogy is know, respect, trust. On balance, people will do more business both inside your organisation and externally with people that they know, respect and trust. People have got to know you, so you've got to show up. Show up to the town hall, show up to the team meeting and participate. Show up to the industry event, whether it's online or in person. Show up and show up wholeheartedly to say, who might I learn from here today, or who might I help have a great experience? So generosity as well is a key part of that. Strategic, we all have networks. We have friends and colleagues and folks all around us. But a strategic network is comprised of people who are going to help you meet your goals. And they are the people who will help you meet your professional goals. So it might be, I'm looking for my next big career move. Who might I have? Who's in my strategic network that can help me accomplish that goal? It might be for your organisation. And certainly, I'll give one quick anecdote, but in my organisation, last organisation, I was working for the National Australia Bank, I do remember one of my colleagues going, you are the most networked person I've ever met. And I said, you know, it's actually the way to get stuff done, Chris. And one of the things that we had to do was test a particular supplier. Our incumbent supplier, not doing very well, had become, for a range of reasons, underperforming, fat, happy, lazy, you know, that kind of stuff. Now, some of that was our fault, to be honest. But anyway, it was a supplier of pretty big kit, expensive equipment that took a lot of capital. I didn't have time to remediate their performance by replacing them with another supplier, because we would have to go through all sorts of things like a request for tender. And if anyone's ever done a request for tender, it's a long, painful process. But I could do an experiment. So I went to my network and said, hey, if I were to bring in a challenger brand to my incumbent supplier, just to give everyone a little bit of a taste of I'm serious about performance being improved, who would you recommend? Because I don't want to stuff around, but I want to do an experiment. And I went to my network of other colleagues in the industry to say, who's the best supplier? Who do I go to and go, come and do an experiment with me? I did. They did. We got it done. Both suppliers lifted performance, or the incumbent supplier lifted performance, because of course the new one was going, hey, 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 we've got an opportunity here. I saved a lot of time and a lot of money by tapping my strategic network to achieve my goal, which was to lift performance. So there's a really practical example how strategic networks can help your business achieve. Talent management is another one. We want to hire the best and the brightest people. Do I want to put an ad up on the job board and hope for the best? Or do I want to go out to my strategic network and say, I need a chemical engineer who's really good with clients but can also interpret clients' needs back to the technical people? Who is that unicorn? Tell me who she is. Yeah, Mel Butcher's the one you need to go and get. Mel, let's have a coffee and let's have a chat. Hey, Mel, come on board. Boom. That's your strategic network giving you an accelerated way of achieving a business goal.
There's so many good little avenues here we could go down. One thing I want to point at is, if you haven't listened to it, check out Lead to Soar episode 102 with Bonnie Marcus, where we talk about her book, The Politics of Promotion, because politics kind of encompasses a bit of networking, at least internal networking. And it's another example of where we have often seen that women need to have a mindset shift in how they're thinking about that term, politics, networking, et cetera.
Absolutely. We also did our episode on why we've got to get better at politics. And it is, you're right, Mel, you're so right. This is a mindset shift. Often we've got the skills there. All of the ingredients are there. We just need to get them on the same page and start mixing them up. So yeah, that mindset shift, hugely important.
Absolutely. And the last thing I wanted to add on that is when you think about developing your strategic network and you're getting really serious about it, think about your values. We hope that, like us, you have a value around intersectionality. And what that means for you being deliberate about developing your strategic network is you need to network with people who don't look like you.
100%.
No matter how good AI gets at reading resumes that get submitted, the fact is that most jobs are still going to be found through networks. And when we get into a position of power where we have the ability to refer someone in, we definitely want to be able to refer in women, Black women, and people from other underrepresented groups.
Absolutely. And the more senior the role becomes, the less likely that the typical, you know, that I guess the volume recruitment processes are followed. Specialist sourcing agents or internal sourcing people are used. But you know what? Executives like me, or how good I used to be, will be tapped to say, hey, Michelle, we need a XYZ person. Have you got someone? And I go, yeah, I do. And I still get those calls today. People go, do you know someone who is that? And I go, sure do. And what I love is when I have women who engage with me and I say, how might I help you? How can I help you achieve your goals? Number one, they know what their goal is. Number two, they tell me exactly how I can help them. And number three, they give me the assets. So they give me a really well-written, beautifully formatted CV of no longer than 2 pages that I can have on my desktop for when someone says, do you know what? And I think, oh, look on my desktop. Because I do, I hold all the CVs women send me and I put them on my desktop because that's the, that's right. Yeah, I've got Mel Butcher. Yep, chemical engineer who's a unicorn. Yep, Mel Butcher. Let me make an introduction. So folks, that's another thing. Be ready for people to help you. Be ready for those people in your strategic network to help you by having the assets ready and the ask ready.
Dear listeners, I just want to admit that I am not a chemical engineer. My degrees are in civil, but
I know I made that up.
A guest we're going to have on soon, her background is chemical engineering. And yes. Definitely.
That's probably
smarter
what's in
me.
My head. I've just given you some qualifications. See how powerful
love it.
I am.
All right. I want to double click on one more area of SQ here. I want to talk a little bit about diminishing versus powered up language. So you wrote about this in When to Speak Up, How You Should Speak Up, these sections in the book. Just give us a little preview of what this is about.
Yeah, and this so could fall into the fixing women category as well, which I'm always mindful of, but this is coaching. And again, like a lot of my book, I've learned from my own mistakes and tried to impart those learnings. So diminishing language is things like, I just want to, do you think that I can, asking permission to speak rather than speaking? And the little words, sorry to disturb you. Well, actually, you're at a meeting and this is actually designed for everyone to be disturbed. So it's a case of really saying to women, let's look at our language and are we unintentionally, unconsciously dialing down our language because we've been conditioned to do so, to dial it down, be smaller, be patient, all those things that we are told to do. How might we start using language that makes us visible and credible? We all know people who are visible, but they're not credible. Hello, Elon Musk, Donald Trump. So we want to be visible and credible. You're credible when you're competent. So know what your competencies are. And some of the language, for example, Mel, I'm at my team meeting. Someone's blathering on about how we're losing customers to our competitor. And in your head, you're going, well, I know exactly why and what we should do about it. Product XYZ needs to be tweaked because the target audience isn't getting what they need. I could sit there and do nothing, say nothing because I'm too scared to. So that is diminishing in and of itself. Or I could go, look, I'm sorry, Deirdre, I think I've got to, look, you might not like this, but. So what's the first thing that you heard there? You might not like this, but. So you've already shaped people's impressions by saying, yeah, I'm probably not going to like it. Thanks for giving me an out. I don't like it. Thank you, Michelle. I'm not going to listen to another word you say. Rather than, I've got an idea about how we address the underperformance of this product. I've done some research, including customer focus groups, which has informed me about, here's the missing link. This is what I propose we do. I'm really interested about how we can form a mini team to do this. Thoughts? That's it. And it's not aggressive. I mean, you know, the old thing. What's the difference between aggressive or assertive? Your gender. But putting that to one side, it's a way of saying, I have an idea about how to grow the business. I've got an idea about how to fix the problem for the business. I want to collaborate with you, this team, to have us outperform. Who's not going to listen to that? And what it does is, yes, you're visible, you're extremely credible, and people go, I think I trust her because, you know, she has these great suggestions all the time. She's not saying, who was that idiot that created this product? What an absolute cluster that is, and blah, 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 blah. You're just saying, I've got an idea and I've done the research. So present yourself, use that positive language. And some of it is around using I have the idea. Not we, we've got an idea. No, no, you're one person. I have an idea about how to take the business forward.
I just had a thought. So there's been some research around this idea that you can anchor people with language. Essentially, you can create a bias. So an example would be, so say I'm the researcher, I would give you a statement that has a number in it, and it could be high or low. And then regardless of what that statement is, whatever we were talking about, when I ask you a completely unrelated question that requires a numeric answer that you don't know the answer to, maybe it would be, if you were the subject, I would ask you how many countries there are in the world. They have been able to consistently show that if the anchoring number was high, people will guess a higher number. And if the anchoring number was low, they'll guess a lower number. And I think that there's a corollary here with what you're talking about with the diminishing language of, you're anchoring the idea, you're diminishing it in the beginning when you use certain language.
Yeah, it's so true. And in Susan's book, No Ceiling, No Walls, she talks about, she has this very illustrative paragraph of a woman's language. And it is, sorry, I don't think you're going to like this, but, and then finishes with, sorry, blah, 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 blah. And I often talk to women about the fact that, you know, when you read a headline or you read, many of us read kind of the first bit and the last bit of a headline. It's, I've been writing blogs for years and I've looked at every article about how to, you know, create a compelling title and things like that. And we often read the first three words and the last couple of words. So if you think about what you say as a headline, think about your first three words and your last three words. If they're, sorry, I don't think you'll like this, or sorry for interrupting, what have you just done? Have you said, Mel, you've anchored people in the, this is not going to be very good, so I'm probably not going to pay attention, or I've already made my mind up. So yes, it's super important. And this is all part of nurturing, cultivating, nurturing, enhancing your professional brand. And again, like Susan says, these are skills. This is not something magical I was born with. I was not. I am nerdishly awkward in the right situations or the wrong situations. And it's typically when I haven't got a skill. I've learned all this. I have learned these skills and I have practiced them and I continue to practice them. And I continue to give myself a mental, come on, Michelle, talking to when I go, can't be bothered with this networking malarkey or my brand. I go, come on, Michelle, what would you say if you're a woman? No, yeah, get my own advice, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, okay. This has been great. Thank you so much, Michelle, for giving us this overview on some of the topics that fall under social intelligence SQ, which again is one of the major, one of the big three parts of your book, The Leadership Compass. And where can people find your book to order it?
Okay, so the first way they can go to michelleredfern.com/books because there are links there, but they're in Australia. So the launch dates are a little different for Australia and the US. In Australia, March 26, Booktopia, Amazon, Angus and Robertson, all your major book retailers. In the US, it's May the 7th, and usually the best destination is Amazon for online. They will be in some bookstores. I'm not entirely sure which ones yet. So that's where you can find them.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Thanks, Mel.
Thanks, listeners. We'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Lead to Soar. We sincerely appreciate your honest, positive reviews. You can leave questions at leadtosoar.com for Michelle and Mel to answer on future episodes. Until next time, we hope you'll use what you've learned here and lead to soar.